Doitya Danava Gandharva Doitya Danava Gandharva Doitya Danava Gandharva Siddha Vidyadra Charanaha Siddha Vidyadriya Siddha Vidyadra Charanaha Siddha Vidyadra Charana Daicha Danava Gandharva Siddha Vidyadra Charanaha Yaksha Raksha Visaschas Cha Yaksha Raksha Pisasyascha Yaksha Raksha Pisasyascha Bhuta Pramata Nayakaha Yaksha Raksha Pisasyascha Bhuta Pramata Nayakaha Vishuddha Sattva Dhamni Adha Vishuddha Sattva Dhamyadha Vishuddha Sattva Dhamyadha Tvai Shastra Sharirini Tvai Shastra Sharirini Tvai Shastra Sharirini Vishuddha Sattva Dhamyadha Tvai Shastra Sharirini Nityam Nibhadha Vairas Te Nityam Nibhadha Vairas Te Nityam Nibhadha Vairas Te Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrisha Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrisha Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrisha Nityam Nibhadha Vairaste Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrisha Vishuddha Sattva Dhamyadha Tvai Shastra Sharirini Nityam Nibhadha Vairaste Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrisha Daitya Danava Gandharva Siddha Vidyadra Charanaha Yaksha Raksha Pisaschascha Bhuta Pramata Nayakaha Vishuddha Sattva Dhamyadha Tvai Shastra Sharirini Nityam Nibhadha Vairaste Vayam Chanye Cha Tadrishaha This is also another example of proper Vaishnava etiquette. Bali Maharaj is addressing the Lord. What's he doing in his address? What does he start with? He's glorifying Krishna. Right? And then after the glorification, he asks for a benediction. Not that you go straight up and ask for something. That's our Western way. Just very straightforward, direct. You know, please give me this. No. First off, he supplicates the word with lovely words. He supplicates the Lord. He says, you know, you're this, you're that, I'm so poor and I'm so unqualified. Somehow or other I've been blessed with your association. Like that. And then he says, please guide me. Yeah? So this again is Vaishnava etiquette. And because it's just like again, in deity worship, when you invite the Lord to be worshipped, you start off, you offer a place to sit. That's the first thing, is you offer someone, please sit down. And then swagatam, or swagat. What does swagat mean?
Welcome.
Welcome. So how do you welcome them? Offer them a beer? No, it's kind words. Maybe you have a kirtan. You know, when the guru comes, you have a kirtan, you offer garlands, things like that, chandan. You welcome them. You make them feel pleased to stay there. You make them feel pleased to bestow their benedictions upon you. Because that's really, you know, that's one of the keys to making advancement in devotional service, is you get the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Because if you have the blessings of the Vaishnavas, then Krishna is going to be so happy to bestow his blessings upon you. And when someone is in you know, if someone is pleased by the way you've approached them, pleased by the way you've worshipped them, then naturally they're going to bestow their benedictions upon you. So the same with Krishna. If he's pleased with our service, then naturally he bestowed benediction upon you. And just thinking, this pastime here made me think of another thing that's very interesting in Vaishnava culture. It's like when you have a public assembly, and you know, people are speaking. Now, in Western culture, who speaks first, generally?
The loudest person.
The loudest person? Well, I mean, if you have a public forum, you know.
And the master
ceremony. Yeah, usually the master ceremonies or the most significant person present there. You know, usually the most important person, you speak first. Because I'm most important, I should go first. In Vaishnava culture, it's actually different. The most learned person speaks last. Now, there's a specific reason for this, because if the persons have before have said something that's incorrect, or you know, different reasons they present, at least the person who speaks last, he's able to correct anything they may have said, or actually conclude and sum up and leave you with the most significant statements. And there's an example of that. Prabhupada was speaking at a program in I can't remember if it was Calcutta or Bombay. It may have been Bombay. It was like a religious interfaith program sort of thing, and all these different people were speaking. So then some Mayavadi was speaking, and Prabhupada was, you know, wasn't very happy with what they were saying. And then so Prabhupada spoke. And Prabhupada completely smashed what this guy was saying, and he established the Siddhanta of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And then he had the devotees do kirtan. He wouldn't let anyone speak after. They just had this big kirtan. They, you know, that went on and on and on for ages, you know. So we see that Prabhupada spoke last to leave the Siddhanta, to leave the conclusion. So, you know, usually when you have an assembly and you have, like, you know, very elevated Vaishnavas, then you'll plan it out. So the person who's presenting the, what they call the keynote address, you know, the actual conclusion you're trying to establish, you have them scheduled to speak last so that they actually leave the lasting impression. Yeah? So it's many, many refined things there. And the more we study, the more we learn about the Vaishnava culture.
Prabhupada also made a point. If somebody in Mayavadi was speaking, he would ask the yogis to do kirtan, loud kirtan.
Yeah. Yeah, just cut right into them. He didn't like to hear this bogus Siddhanta. Okay, and there's one more verse I'll just read. Kechanod bhad va vairena bhaktya kechana kamata Natata Satva Samrabdha Sani Krishna Suradaya. Transliteration. Daitya Dhanava. The Daitya and Dhanava demons. Gandharva. And the Gandharvas. Celestial singers. Now it says the Daityas and the Dhanavas. The Daityas are the children of Diti. The Dhanavas, I'm not sure. Does anyone know who the Dhanavas are? I can look that up in my encyclopedia. Siddha Vidyadhara Charana.
Siddha Vidyadhara.
The Siddha, Vidyadhara, and Charana demigods.
Siddha,
Yaksha.
Yaksha.
The Yakshas.
Yes.
Semi-pious spirits.
Semi-pious spirits.
Raksha. The
Rakshashas.
Man-eating spirits.
Man-eating spirits.
Actually, I remember I was in St. Petersburg. The first time I went to St. Petersburg, and this devotee, he took me around to the different museums there, showed me through all the museums, and there's one which was a natural history museum, and they had a Rakshasa there. I was like, wow, it was like about 9 foot tall, had these like big bulbous eyes and distended teeth, you know, all in different directions, and the coppery hair. It was like really fearsome looking thing, you know? Just like the descriptions of the Rakshasas. And like they have really big chest and narrow waist and narrow hips. It was really, you know, according to the descriptions I've read, it looked just like a Rakshasa. Pisascha, the carnivorous Pisascha demons. Cha, and Bhuta, the ghosts. Pramata Nayakaha, and the evil Pramata and Nayaka spirits. Vishuddha, perfectly pure. Sattva, of goodness. Dhamni,
toward the embodiment.
Adha,
direct.
Tvayi,
you.
Shastra, which comprises the revealed scriptures. Sharirini, the possessor of such a body. Nityam,
always.
Nibadha,
fixed.
Vaira,
in
enmity.
Te,
they.
Vayam,
we.
Cha,
also.
Anye,
others.
Cha,
and.
Tadrisha,
like them.
Kechana,
some.
Udbhadha,
especially obstinate.
Interesting, eh?
So you can call me Udbhadha, especially obstinate.
Vairena,
with hatred.
Bhaktya,
with devotion.
Kechana,
some.
Kamata,
rising out of lust.
Na,
not.
Tata,
so.
Sattva,
by the material mode of goodness.
Sangrabdha,
those who are not predominated.
Sani
Krishna,
attracted.
Sura,
demigods.
Adaya,
and others.
Translation. Many who have been constantly absorbed in enmity toward you ultimately become attracted to you, who are the direct embodiment of transcendental goodness and whose divine form comprises the revealed scriptures. These reformed enemies include daityas, danavas, gandharvas, siddhas, vidyadharas, charanas, yakshas, rakshasas, pisachas, bhutas, pramatas and nayakas, and also ourselves and many others like us. Some of us have become attracted to you because of exceptional hatred, while others have become attracted because of their mood of devotion based on lust. Who can think of an example of a mood of devotion based on lust?
Kubja.
Yeah. But the demigods and others infatuated by material goodness feel no such attraction for you. Please repeat. Many who have been constantly absorbed,
many who have been constantly absorbed
in enmity toward you,
in enmity toward you,
ultimately became attracted to you,
who are the direct embodiment of transcendental goodness,
and whose divine form
comprises the revealed scriptures.
These reformed enemies
include
daityas, danavas, Gandharvas, Siddhas, Vidyadharas. Charanas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pisachas. Bhutas, Pramatas. And Nayakas.
And
also ourselves.
And
many others like us.
Some of us
have become attracted to you because of exceptional hatred. While others have become attracted because of their mood of devotion. Based on lust. But the demigods. And others infatuated by material goodness. Feel no such attraction for you. So here we see again an example of a very, very advanced devotee. That Bali Maharaj, he's classifying himself amongst all these non-devotee type people here, you know, who are actually, you know, well, I'm not a devotee, but, you know, because of hatred I've become attracted to you. But actually we see that if one is attracted in say, for instance, with hatred or something like that, they may achieve liberation. But it's not the kind of liberation a Vaishnava aspires for. There's liberation, you know, this what they call this, not Niraka, what is it? Kaivalya. This merging into the Brahman. And actually for a devotee, this is actually considered the most unpleasant thing. And we see, you know, there's so many personalities, like Shishupal, for instance. He merged into the body of the Lord. It was seen that when he chopped off the head, that the effulgence went up the sky and then came back and merged in the body of the Lord. Many different demons, like Agasura, same thing. You know the story when Krishna entered into the mouth and he expanded up into this, you know, so big, and actually, you know, killed the demon, and then Agasura's spirit soul that was Agasura, he went up into the sky, and when Krishna came out of the mouth, he entered into the body of the Lord, and we see that, you know, the demons, they do achieve this liberation. But it's not the kind of liberation, you know, a devotee may be interested in Sarupya, Samipya, Salokya, and Shashti means opulence. But not this the last one, which is called Sayuja. Devotees are not interested in this one. Because, and we hear sometimes that, you know, about the Mayavadis, that this is the Sayuja Mukti, this is what they're interested in. But for a devotee, this is considered to be hellish. Because the demons are awarded, those who are opposed to Krishna are awarded the same liberation, which is not at all attractive. And we see that often, it's like because Bali Maharaj is speaking about persons who are absorbed in a hateful kind of meditation, just like we see with Kamsa. You know, he was constantly meditating. When he heard that he was going to be killed by the eighth child of Devaki, and that this child had already been born. You know the story when Vasudev, he went to Vrindavan. And it's an interesting story because sometimes I hear devotees, they depict that you know, the waters of the Jamuna parted, very much like the story of Moses. You know, he got his staff and he waved the staff and the waters parted and he walked through. Not like that. In the Harivansa, it describes how he saw a jackal walking across the Jamuna, because the Jamuna is like that, the sandbanks in the Jamuna, and you can see sometimes, you see people, you know, the bridge buses, where they know where the sandbanks are, they just walk across the Jamuna, they know where the shallow parts are. And so he saw a jackal walking across, so he followed the jackal. And then when he got to Braj, again according to Harivansa, it describes how Yasoda Mayi, she gave birth to a child and to a son and a daughter, not just one, there was two. And then so he brought the daughter back, and then he placed child Krishna there that was born to his wife Devaki. And it describes, this is probably the only instance of merging I know which we accept as being bona fide, is the two Krishnas became one Krishna. Yeah? It's described how when he placed the child down there, they became one. And then he took Yogamaya back to Mathura. And then when Kamsa found, when he heard the baby crying and that, and when he found out there was actually a new child, he went down to kill the child, and as he did with all the others, he would dash the head. You know, just hold them by the feet and dash the head on the ground, on the pavement. And then that when he tried to do that with that child, the child slipped out of his hands and flew up into the air and took on a very, very fearsome form called Bhadrakali. And was basically saying to Kamsa, "You fool, your cruel death has already been born elsewhere." And he became so fearful. Mm-hmm. You know, and became very, very, "Oh no, what have I done?" You know, like when he saw, you know, Bhadrakali just fly up in the air like that, and it was just like, just it put the fear of death into him. You know, he was really, really scared. He went and unchained with his own hands, unchained Vasudeva and Devaki, and was apologetic. "Oh, you know, he's like, it's kind of a little bit like Smasan Vairagya. You know, this Prabhupada talks about all these different Vairagyas, and this one, Smasan Vairagya, is when you go to the cremation ground, you know, and you're cremating your loved ones, and one starts to become all renounced. Oh yes, this material world, it's just, what is it meant for? You know, but we all just wind up being burnt and we turn into ashes and this like that." And they become very, very renounced at the crematorium. But actually, how long does it last? You know, as soon as you walk down the friend, you meet down the road with your friends, and "Oh, let's go have a drink" or something like that, and completely forget about all this renunciation. You know, and you know, there's many different renunciations that Prabhupada talks about. He talks about Smasan Vairagya, Markata Vairagya, like the renunciation of the monkeys. They walk around naked, have sex life all day. Falgu Vairagya. There's a river in India called the Falgu River, which is like a blind river, you know, the water's underground. And so it's like, you know, on the surface it may appear, you know, like a river, but actually it's not. You know, so on the surface they may appear like a sadhu, but actually they're not. They're harbouring all these lusty desires. So with this Smasan Vairagya, one may be renounced at the moment of, you know, this serious moment when the loved one has died and when they're burning the body at the ghat and stuff like that. So in the same way with Kamsa, you know, when fear, when death was manifest before him, he was presenting himself as being a very, very, you know, philosophical and knowledgeable sort of a person, and actually wanted to practice proper principles and, you know, behavior, etc. like that. Yet, you know, and he let Vasudeva and Devaki go, but later when he went back and he started to talk with his advisors, what did they plan to do? The advisors said to him, "Okay, what we'll do is any child who's been born within the last 10 days, we're going to kill them." So they set about going around killing every child that had been born in the last 10 days. This is a very, very renounced person, you know, he's actually had some deep realizations there. You know. So, we see that from that point on, that Kamsa just became completely absorbed in Krishna. In his every waking moment, he was thinking about Krishna. When he was sleeping, he was dreaming about Krishna. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, just 24 hours a day, nothing but Krishna. Huh? This is Krishna conscious. Problem is, it's not the Krishna conscious we aspire for. Because as it talks, Rupa Goswami says, anukulyena Krishnanu. That your attraction to Krishna must be anukul. What does this word anukul mean? Favorable. You have a favorable attraction for Krishna. But then we look at Kamsa. What was his attraction? His attraction was pratikul. Means unfavorable. And so in devotional service, there are many things which are favorable for advancement. Just like Rupa Goswami, he talks about that in the Nectar of Instruction. What's that verse? Anyone know that verse? About the six things that are favorable for pure devotional service? Huh? Who knows the verse? What's the last line of that verse? Sadvidim priti lakshanam. So these six are the six loving exchanges with the devotee. No, it's what is it? The six things that are unfavorable: atyahara prayaschascha prajalpo niyamagraha, jana sangascholyamcha, Pranashati. So it says these things destroy. So atyahara means collecting more things than required. Yeah? Prayaschascha. You see how much I revise my verses. Oh gosh. Do you know the translation, Maharaji? Yeah, over-collecting. Yeah, that's Niyamagra. Niyamagraha means following the rules and regulations. It's actually, Rupa Goswami translates it in two different ways. Follow the rules and regulations only for the sake of following the rules and regulations and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or disregarding the rules and regulations and acting independently or whimsically. Collecting more funds than required, being greedy for mundane achievements. This is... eating more than necessary, worldly association, and then in the things that are favourable, he says, "Utsahan nishtya darya tat tat kama pravartana sangotyaga satovriti sadbibhakti prasidyati." So prasidyati. So pra emphasises sidya. It gives this perfection. So this is very perfection. You know? Pra is like, you know, pramata, you know, it just gives this emphasis. So it says utsahan, enthusiasm. We see, you know, Uddhavabhu so enthusiastic in devotional service, and so many devotees are very enthusiastic. These things are favourable. Utsahan nishchayad, this patience, determination. Tat tat karma pavat, following the rules and regulations of devotional service. To follow the rules and regulations is very favourable. But we don't take this niyamagraha, follow the rules and regulations only for the sake of the rules and regulations. And not for the sake. No, we apply ourselves to those rules which we know are going to give us benefit in spiritual advancement, and understand, oh, I follow this rule like this because of this. It's not it's just like a blind thing. No, Prabhupada discouraged blind following. We need to understand why we do these things. So we follow the rules and regulations that are favourable for the execution of devotional service. Sangotyagat, again. It's interesting, the six things that are unfavourable for devotional service is this worldly-minded association. So again, favourable for pure devotional service is to renounce this worldly association. Sankatyaga satobhriti. And satobhriti, follow the previous acharyas, etc. like that. These things are favourable for pure devotional service. So you see there's, you know, there's this favourable practice of devotional service. If we do these things that help us to develop in our spiritual life, then this will accelerate us forward. But if we do these other things, it's going to slow us down. So in the same way, you know, Kamsa, he was, in a sense, he was performing devotional service because he was remembering Krishna, but he was doing it in an unfavourable way. He wanted to kill Krishna. Yeah? He was thinking he could kill Krishna, which is kind of pretty far out. Yeah? You're going to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah? Then we see that Yasoda Mayi, she was punishing Krishna. She chased him around with a stick. She was going, you know, threatening to beat him with a stick. And then she caught him and tied him up to a grinding mortar. But what was her motivation? Even though she's appearing like she's going to, you know, try to harm Krishna, what is her motivation? She has this motherly spirit and she's wanting to nurture Krishna to become a good person. So this is favourable. Even though to an uneducated person it may seem that she's acting in a way that's unfavourable, she's acting in a very favourable way because she has this loving, motherly emotion towards Krishna. And we see that, you know, when Krishna, when he came to Hastinapur, you know, just before the war, he went to Hastinapur to try to avert the war. Because that was the proper thing to do. He knew the war wouldn't be averted, but he tried to avert the war because this was the proper thing to do. And when he went there, Duryodhana had prepared this wonderful feast for him, like, you know, a whole banquet hall just full of wonderful preparations for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna refused to even look at it because he was ill-motivated. He wanted to bring Krishna to the side of the Kauravas. So Krishna just, he wouldn't even look at the feast. And it's interesting, from there he went to the house of Vidura. And Vidura was so happy to see Krishna that he was, he was asking his wife, bring something, we have to offer something to Krishna. Krishna's arrived, we have to offer him something. So his wife went and she looked, and the only thing they had was bananas. So he said, bring them quickly. So she brought the bananas. And Vidura, he was peeling the bananas. And he was so much absorbed in ecstasy that Krishna was at his house that he was throwing away the banana and giving Krishna the skin. And Krishna was so happy with the mood of his devotee that he was taking the skin and he was eating it and relishing it. And so we see that if one is approaching in a favorable manner, then Krishna is very happy to accept that service. And there's one, was it Bhavagrahi Janardana? There's a verse in the Bhagavatam where it sort of points out how Krishna takes on the mood, you know, of accepting that service of the worshipper, even though it may be done in a very simple way. I remember years ago, I was visiting some people in the south of England, and they had, you know, their Gaunitai deities, and every day the mother would offer aarti to the deities. And their son, you know, he was also seeing this worship, and he wanted to do something, so he would come and he'd have his doll, and he would offer his doll to the deities. So Krishna's accepting that because he's doing it with a genuine sort of motive of trying to satisfy the Lord. Another example, which is very, very demonstrative of this, is in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada was there, and this man was coming forward and offering Prabhupada a significant donation, a check. And he was, when the man was offering this donation, the man's mood was, you know, he was talking about how wonderful and great he was. You know, I'm such a big industrious, I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. I'll give you a donation, you know, out of my kindness. Prabhupada just took the check, put it aside, and didn't give it any attention. And then Saraswati, Malati's daughter, came, and she offered Prabhupada a flower. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, you bought this for me. You're so kind," and he's really, you know, making a point of this. And we see how you know, the Prabhupada, when this person is like out of false ego, is you know, trying to put himself forward, then Prabhupada was not interested. Yet when someone with some genuine desire, some genuine interest to please Prabhupada, was offering a simple thing, a flower, then Prabhupada accepted, and he gave so much attention to that person. So, and Krishna says in the Gita, he says that patram pushpam param toyam yome bhakta prayachati tadaham bhakti upahritam astami prayat ashtami. I will accept, Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept. But if someone is offering Krishna something, even the most magnificent thing, out of false ego, he doesn't accept. He's not interested in that. So we see that the mood of approach is very significant in our when we're approaching Krishna, our mood of worship, our mood when we're chanting. You know, Srila Prabhupada would say that we chant the holy name in the mood of a baby crying out for its mother. You know, we need to take this chant, and it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I've been trying to do this for a number of years, and it's just like I don't feel really like I'm getting anywhere on this. You know, but still, this approach of just trying to like it's just like when the baby cries out for the mother. The baby has no other shelter than the mother. Not necessarily that we should start crying and rolling on the floor and screaming while we're chanting our rounds. People might think we're sahajas. The idea is that, like, you know, when the baby is crying out for the mother, this is the baby's only shelter. You know, the only person who can solve whatever problem the baby has is the mother. The baby needs food, the baby needs changing. Mother is everything for the baby. So in the same way, when we're chanting our rounds, take this focus Krishna is everything to me. The holy name, this is my deliverer. And therefore we need to become so focused, so attentive to our chanting. It's very, very important. So again, this is back to this point of favorable and unfavorable approach. We see here how it's discussing about all these persons who Bali Maharaj is talking about, all these persons who approach Krishna in an unfavorable way, their result may not necessarily be so good. Better that one is approaching in a favorable method. Of course, as we mentioned yesterday, akama sabakama va moksha kama udradihi tibrena bhati yogina yajeta purusharam param. whether you're full of material desires, without material desires, or desiring liberation, by all means worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it doesn't matter, you know, really. Because the whole, just like we see with Dhruva Maharaj, when Dhruva Maharaj approached the Lord and he started to perform austerity, he went to the forest and he stood on his tippy toes and he was performing austerities, he was chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he was motivated. He wanted a kingdom greater than that of his great grandfather. You know who his great grandfather is? Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma. Pretty big kingdom he wanted, isn't it? So he had some pretty big desires there. You know, because he was, I think his father was Uttanapad, and he was insulted because he was pushed off the lap. You know, Uttanapad had few wives, and he was the son of one of the not so favourite wives, and you know, so it was considered he didn't have the right to sit on his father's lap. And being the Kshatriya that he was very offended by this, and so he went to the forest. He performed austerities, and actually the Lord appeared to him, and there's a verse. It's not in the Bhagavatam. I don't remember where it is. It's in one of the commentaries on the Bhagavatam. But anyhow, so Dhruva Maharaj, he prays to the Lord that when he saw him, that, you know, like, I was actually, you know, performing austerities to get, you know, certain benedictions from you, which were just like broken pieces of glass. And now I see you, I realize I have achieved the most valuable jewel. So it's interesting that even though we may have an improper approach, like we see here, you know, with the Daityas, the Dhanavas, the Gandharvas, etc., their approach may be improper, yet when they get that darshan, when they get that blessing or benediction from the Lord, they actually become purified. And just like we see that Dhruva, he was touched with the Lord's conch, and he became purified as a result of this. So obviously it's better that our approach is favourable, that we're actually approaching Krishna for the right means. Yet still, it's just like, you know, there's this word used in relation to the sun, prophylactic. So prophylactic essentially means that the thing is so powerful that it's able to purify a place, and it is not contaminated. So the sun is just like, you know, in India it's very common, especially in the villages, they have stool fields and people pass stool and urine out in the field. And of course in the West they think, oh, this is so dirty, this is so uncultured, but it's actually a lot cleaner than a toilet. You know, because the sun doesn't shine into the toilet, so the place remains contaminated. But the sun shines down on the stool field and it dries up all the moisture out of the urine, the stool, etc., and purifies the place. Yeah? Yet when we're passing indoors, and, you know, we have to spray some little things around, and, you know, usually have alcohol and stuff like that, which in itself is also impure. So places like bathrooms, toilets are particularly impure places, and they've become purified. So, you know, Vedic culture is actually very, very, as I mentioned before, very, very advanced, refined culture. But we think, you know, because of our convenience, we have a little room inside the house, you know, where we go to the bathroom, where we pass stool and urine. Very, very unclean. But what can you do? I don't think the council will allow us to pass out in the backyard. Yeah. So we see that the nature of Krishna is also, you know, like the sun. When it dries up these places, the sun is so powerful, it doesn't become contaminated. And so in the same way, when Krishna, he comes into contact, or people come into contact with Krishna who may necessarily be impure, well, the more they come into contact with the process of devotional service, not so much with Krishna himself, because one cannot come into contact with Krishna unless they're purified. Material things cannot come into contact with Krishna. But when one comes into contact with the process of devotional service, with the great fire services, whatever, then the nature of the Lord is because he's so pure that they become purified, not that he becomes affected. But we, on the other hand, are not the same. That's why very important that in our associations we're quite careful. We don't associate with worldly minded people. As it says, you know, Sangha Tyaga, we give up this worldly minded association because we can become affected by it. We are not of the same potency as Krishna. We're very, very small. And also we see in terms of associating with the opposite sex, we need to be very careful. You know, it's from Manu Samhita. This verse is quoted in the ninth canto. Says matra swaso dhitro va navi viktakshin obavet balavan indriyai grangso vidvangang apisakarshadi. It says Naviviktashano. Don't sit on the same seat with your mother, with your sister, or with your daughter. Matra Srasu Drihitrava. So matra means mother, etc. Like that. I see sometimes here in the courtyard, you know, men and women who are not married. Doesn't mention wife. Only person you can associate, you know, only person you can associate with closely with like that of the opposite sex is your partner, wife or husband, not someone else. You know, because it says, balavan indriyai gramya, the senses, indriya, balavan, they're so strong, yeah, that the mind may be taken away. So we avoid, you know, close association with members of the opposite sex. Whether it be man or woman, whatever, because it's described, you know, Prabhupada describes how woman is like fire, man is like butter. I remember Harikesh used to say, he says, don't think you're so deep frozen butter that no fire will melt you. It's like that, you know, it's like, doesn't matter how frozen the butter is, you put it on the fire, melts, just like that. So we need to be very careful in our association. To you know, keep a respectful distance. You know, we converse as much as necessary. You know, business basically. Whatever service we're doing, if it's involved, that we have to have some communication with the members of the opposite sex, and we do that. But no more than that, because you know, it's just like the mind and the senses. You know, at this point, at least I can talk for myself. The mind and senses at this point are my enemies. They don't help me often. You know, and even you know maybe. In our waking moments, then maybe we're quite strict, but you know, we allow the mind to focus or think of something. Then you go to sleep at night, what do you start dreaming about? The very things you've been focusing on during the day. So maybe even in your waking moments, you're not externally interacting, but you know, you're thinking about it, and then in your sleeping moments, you're dreaming about it. You know? And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it gives like... a very interesting analysis of what is illicit sex. And Lord Chaitanya is giving this, and he gives eight forms of illicit sex, and he's saying that even to think about the opposite sex is a form of illicit sex. So, you know, I'm not trying to encourage devotees to be, you know, like, fortunately we don't have so much of that these days, but, you know, these women-hating brahmacharis, they see a woman, they spit at the ground, and think, this is just like, you know, just too weird. You know, it's uncivilized. Actually, you know, Chanaka Pandit, I don't remember the verse, but he says that a wise man sees all women as mother. Now, who is it who spits on the ground when they see their mother? No, we treat you know, with respect. They're Vaishnavis, and we're Vaishnavas, and there's certain conduct that needs to be there. But, you know, respect doesn't mean joking, laughing, having a good time together with it, you know. We need to have a respectful distance. This is going to help us. Because, you know, again, if we are associating, if the senses come into contact with the objects of the senses, what happens? We try to enjoy. And when we're enjoying the senses, what happens? We forget Krishna. This is what we're here for. Why do we join this temple? Because it's a nice social club? Why are we members of ISKCON? It's not because of the social scene. You know? And it's kind of interesting, because it's a small community, there are different, what do you call them, dynamics than you would see in like the broader community, like in Melbourne City, the way people associate. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, we're associating with quite closely on a daily basis. Yet we have a different purpose. Their purpose is self-centered. Their purpose is to enjoy their senses. They couldn't care less whether the others suffer or not, really, when it gets down to it. Couldn't care less. But our purpose is to please Krishna. And as soon as the objects come into contact with the senses come into contact with the objects, you lose the focus. So the real object of our mind, intelligence, senses is Krishna. This is, we have to understand this. So avoid these types of associations. You know? Of course, we need to interact. That's just natural. We need to interact. Otherwise, it's just you know, it's not possible to live in such an environment and not interact. But as much as is necessary. Just like Prabhupada would say, you do whatever is necessary to keep body and soul together to serve Krishna. So you maintain your health. But not that we go down to the gym all day and we're pumping iron, we're doing this, we're doing that, so we have a big, muscly body. No, this is not the point. The point is we do whatever is necessary to maintain body and soul together to serve Krishna. So we interact with the members of the opposite sect as much as is necessary, under guidelines. It's not we just, oh, well, I'm just doing, you know, I'm going out with a nightclub to this Mataji because we have to discuss how we're dressing the deities tomorrow. That's not appropriate. No, it's under guidelines. You know? And even like, you know, in the marriage ashram, you know, in the grihastha ashram, there are strict guidelines on how you associate. It's not just like, oh, now I'm married, I can do anything I like. No, there are guidelines we follow. So, you know, it is part of our culture. It's the way we associate with each other, part of our culture. And the culture has a single purpose. The culture is simply there to propel us to the lotus feet of Krishna. Everything we're doing in this devotional service, everything that's been given us by the acharyas, is simply to propel us to the lotus feet of Krishna. And if it's doing something else, it means we're not following it properly. You know, this culture is the perfect vehicle. You see it like that. It is the perfect vehicle to take you back home to Godhead. And if you're making detours, you're not following the instructions properly. You're not looking at the right map. So it just, you know, apply the culture, you know, and it will take us back to Krishna. That's what it's meant for. Okay, finish there. Is there any questions at all, comments? To Prabhupada and to the deities. Okay. Adam Prabhu?
I was just going to say about that you're acting as our guru in one sense. You're
in a limited sense. Very limited sense.
Still instruction.
But still, you know, I need to pay my obeisances back to you. If I'm sitting here, you offer my obeisances, I don't offer obeisances back to you, that's proud. Yeah. I'm a straw, you know, I have to see that I'm a straw on the street. I have to see that. If I want to make progress, in the 13th chapter of the Gita, Srila Prabhupada mentions in a purport there, I think it's verses 8 to 13 or 8 to 12 or something like that. Prabhupada, he talks about, because it talks about all the different qualities of a devotee. And in there he talks about humility. He says humility is the forerunner of knowledge. So we have to become humble. If we want to learn this devotional process, if we want to approach the lotus feet of Krishna, pride can be nowhere in our being. You know, we see the Goswamis, as it describes, you know, that they were offering obeisances thousands of times every day. The most elevated scholar, Jiva Goswami, you know, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, the most elevated personalities, are offering obeisances to every single person they saw. So you come to the temple, you offer respect to Srila Prabhupada, he's our acharya. You must offer respects to the deities. But then, you know, if you're paying obeisances to a devotee who's, you know, on a similar level, who's not in a particular ashram such as your spiritual master, your Diksha Guru, or maybe a very prominent Siksha Guru, like Srila Prabhupada, a very prominent Siksha Guru, or a sannyasi. These people are not obliged to offer obeisances back, but others are obliged. That's just that's the Vaishnava etiquette. Unless they're a very, very elevated person. You know, like different devotees who come here, you know, senior Vaishnavas, senior Grihasthas, like Burijan Prabhu is a very elevated devotee. Ravindra Prabhu is a very elevated Grihastha. But otherwise, you know, is you need to allow them the opportunity to reciprocate. Just like I was mentioning yesterday about, you know, Janani Vasubhu told me when you pay obeisance when you come to the temple and the doors are closed, generally you don't pay your obeisance to the deities when they're not giving darshan. Of course you come to the temple, you offer obeisance, but then you don't go across the altars and do it, but because they're not able to reciprocate with you by giving darshan. And also he was saying you don't also circumambulate the deities. Of course you can't do it here, you can circumambulate the temple, but you know, you can't circumambulate the deities when they're closed because they can't reciprocate with you. There's many, you know, fine points like that. This is Yeah, if the deities aren't giving darshan, right, you know, like in some temples they have the facility where you can circumambulate the deities. So the way that Janani Asura explained it to me is like normally you would not circumambulate the deities when the curtains are closed because they cannot reciprocate with you by giving darshan. Not to the deities, just pay obeisance when you come into the temple. But it's not like specifically you go across in front of each altar paying obeisances like that. Yeah. And also when they're sleeping. It's like when you wake up the deities in the morning, you pay obeisance to your spiritual master outside the altar. You go onto the altar. Actually, Prabhupada says you go onto the altar, you turn the light switch on, you come pay obeisances, you go on, you wake up the deities. You know, Prabhupada was saying many times you offer obeisances. Generally speaking, what you do is you go and you wake up the deities. Then after the deities have been woken, all the services, you know, all the different services are finished, you go outside and then pay, you know, your obeisances to the deities outside the altar. You know, after he's woken up, you don't pay obeisances while he's sleeping. Yeah. There's many things like that. It's like, you know, when they would wake the kings, they'd come and they'd chant the glories of the kings outside the room to wake them up. So the same when we do the Sarvabhadrakaruna Bhagavan, we chant all these songs glorifying Krishna, and then he slowly wakes up, then we go and we chant the mantras, ring the bell and wake him up, and then go outside and offer obeisances. Yeah. Many things like that. Any other question?
What's the significance when you're pronouncing the left side should face the danger instead of your right?
I don't know the significance, to tell you the truth, but I know it is significant. I was hearing a discussion the other day in one temple. They had set Prabhupada's Vyasasana up on the right side of the deities, and Prabhupada didn't like that. He told them to move it either on the left side or directly facing the deities. You generally approach the deity from that side. You approach the Lord from that side. Even when you circumambulate, generally you circumambulate starting from the left side or from their right side. Why, I don't know. I don't have any information about that. But generally all these things start from that side.
I read it somewhere, but could you explain?
Yeah, I haven't come across an explanation of why. But it's just that's what you do. You offer obeisances with your left side to the deities. You approach them from their right side. You start circumambulation from their right side, etc. like that. Maybe that's just the way it's done. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. What is Nityalila? Yeah. Yeah. Again, I don't know why that is like that, but I just know it's done like that. But generally, you know, for a spiritual master on his Nityalila, then you offer obeisances with your right with your left side towards the person. You approach from that side. I mean, I don't really know where that's come from about the right side. I'd have to research that a bit, actually. Yeah. Okay, Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Premanandi.